Welcome to A Crime Cast by Revamp. Thank you for tuning in. Today's topic is going to be Lois Maxine Enzi. Before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about Revamp. Revamp is a 501c3 nonprofit based out of Fort Smith, Arkansas. We truly are an advocacy group for crime victims' families. We are often contacted to work a case by the victim's family or a friend or sometimes even law enforcement. We consist of retired and current law enforcement as well as private investigators and advocates. We dig into these cases. We take the actual case file and we just start from the beginning. And we have had some success in the past that we're very proud of. Now, in a previous little teaser, we told you that we were going to dig into the cases that were connected to a possible serial killer that lived his entire life, or most of his life, right here in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Now, he was also known to live in Tulsa and to travel back and forth to Tulsa. He also lived in Muldrow and Salisaw. In fact, his crime spree started out with an auto theft in Salisaw of a city vehicle, and then he and two other men were on a crime spree. They did armed robberies. They attacked a woman in Shakota, Oklahoma, terrorized and raped her, and fled there to Mason, Texas, and were eventually caught in Mason, Texas. Now, this guy came on the radar a long time ago because he was a person of interest, if not a suspect, in two homicides in Sequoia County. Along the way, our team coordinator was searching for an article about a house fire that happened on 6th Street. And lo and behold, after months of searching, we finally find it. And it had involved a woman being found in the backyard, and the occupant of the house had succumbed to smoke inhalation and fire, along with having about 100 cuts and injuries to his body. Even though a woman was found in a shallow grave, an active homicide case was not opened. And we're going to dive into that one, and that's going to be a shocking one, I do believe. At least it shocked our team. But that was the beginning of this guy named Alvin. So let me tell you a little bit more about this character first. He had premonitions, and he had premonitions about more than one homicide. But what we find interesting also about him is that he only injected himself into cases that he was tied to, except for one, which was the kidnapping of a young child out of Crawford County. Now, he was looked at in that case. And another interesting aspect is the man who died in the house fire had kidnapped a little girl about the same age as Morgan Nick when she was kidnapped in 95. The little girl that he kidnapped was retrieved from Kansas City area shortly before the Morgan Nick kidnapping. And we have done an interview with her, and it's going to be on a following podcast. Now, this is the only case that we cannot positively tie him to that he injected himself in. So that's kind of mysterious. He was even taken in and questioned by the police at one time on that kidnapping. He claimed to have a premonition. He took them to the Mulberry area, but nothing was ever produced from that interview. However, after he passed away recently, we did search his house, and we did find some writings where he talked about the Morgan Nick kidnapping, and he named two other people. One of the people that he named was the man who just died in this house fire in 2008. The same man who allegedly kidnapped a young 6 or 7 year old girl previously in the early part of 95. So there's a lot of questions around this man. It's amazing that he was a suspect in so many homicides, yet always seemed to be able to elude being arrested for a homicide, kidnapping, or murder. We're going to talk a lot more about him and the other crimes that he was possibly connected to in later podcasts, but we're going to talk about Lois Maxine Enzi today because it's coming up on her 42nd anniversary of her murder, and her family is still awaiting answers in her murder. And this happened in Fort Smith, Arkansas, July the 19th, 1979, and it's still an unsolved case today. So I recently recorded a phone call with Nikki talking about her mother and her mother's death and how it affected her. So let's go to that call now. This is Nikki Enzi, the youngest daughter of murder victim Lois Maxine Patton Enzi. Hello, Nikki. I'd like to start out with you just telling us a little bit about what you remember about your mother.
The story I heard when I was growing up as a child was that she was working in a convenience store called Jay's Night Owl, and she had been there for one shift. The next day, she went in for her normal shift to work overnight, was there for maybe an hour from what I believe, and was abducted from the store and was later found 9 days later up over on Bry Hill. From what I heard, it was one man that was involved. I've later come to find out it was probably two or three.
From the time that she was found, we understand that there was a lot of controversy at first when she was missing. They thought that maybe she had just disappeared, just taken off. She was 23 years old. She was very intelligent, and she had been overseas, and maybe she came back and had two little children, and things just got to her, but that was not the case.
No, that was not the case at all.
No.
That was evident when her body was found 9 days later.
Absolutely. So all these years went by, and you never knew what happened to your mom. Now, let's talk about Lois Maxine Patton Enzi. She was 23 years old. She was very intelligent. She had graduated high school with, you know, a stellar report card. She spoke multiple languages, and she had two little baby girls that she adored, and everyone that we've interviewed talks about how she just adored her family.
Yes, she did. You know, I may not remember her, but the stories I've heard about her have told me that she loved us very much, and my dad loved him very much as well.
I truly believe that's true. I do. So all these years have gone by, the 42nd anniversary of your mother's murder, 42nd anniversary is coming up July the 19th. And you have waited 42 years for some answers and resolution to this case of unjustly took your mother from you and your sister. So what was it like growing up not knowing what happened to your mother?
Well, you know, there was a lot of suspicion within the family. I know from the Fort Smith Police Department directed towards my dad. So that was hard, knowing that, you know, maybe he was living under this cloud of suspicion when it came to law enforcement. Of course, as a family, we never in a million years ever thought that he had anything to do with it. I know it changed my dad. He always acted very happy, but you could just see it in his eyes that he was not a happy man. He was depressed. He was lonely for her. My sister as well, she has memories of her because she was older than me. So I know it was a lot harder for her too, growing up with those memories of my mom. To me, it seemed like it was a little easier maybe because I don't have those memories, but it was also hard as well because I wanted those memories so badly.
Yeah.
You know, my grandparents, they drank themselves basically to death. They were both alcoholics, and I know that that had a lot to do with my mom's murder. Never knowing what happened to their little girl, I can't imagine the pain and heartbreak that they went through.
The worst thing a parent can go through is to lose a child, and she was just a 23-year-old child, really. Even though she was a mother, she was just a child.
Yes, yeah, just a child herself, 23. My oldest son is 24, so I think about that a lot, losing a kid that was so young and still had so much to live for. You know, we were all robbed. It wasn't just myself and my sister and my dad. I mean, her brothers were robbed of her. Her parents were robbed. My cousins were robbed of an aunt.
A lot of people were robbed, yes.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I've talked with most of your family, and they all have the same feelings that you did. I mean, it was such a tragic thing, and they've waited 42 years for answers. Now, over the years, let's go back in time just a little bit. So she's
a young mother. She takes a job at Jay's Night Owl, which was over on 271 South. It was owned by James Bear. And I've interviewed James, and he was very affected by this murder as well. And he still talks about it today as if it were yesterday. He remembers a lot of details. And the police really did seem to put out a big effort at the very beginning when she was missing. And they searched for her. They just couldn't come up with any leads. They couldn't, they couldn't come through with anything. But then a man came forward with a premonition almost immediately. And yes, this man had the same premonition about other homicide victims, which is just, I just have trouble believing that they were premonitions rather than firsthand knowledge.
Right, right. I've actually only come to learn about this within, from you, Patty, within the last year. It actually will be a year in August that we started talking about this. And I had no idea that this man had such connections not only to my mother's death, but to multiple other missing and murdered women.
Yeah, he was a number one suspect, if not the only suspect or person of interest in other homicides in the area.
Right.
Now, a few years ago, there was a detective who, she's now over in Oklahoma, but she was with Sebastian County, and she did a lot of legwork on this case.
Yes, yes, she sure did.
And we have been told that in the past they have had multiple meetings with many law enforcement officers. I think in one meeting there was almost 50 or 60 law enforcement officers because they didn't know what to do with this guy. But in your mother's case, what is really sad is that they were ready to go forward with murder conviction on him or murder indictment on him the end of 79, the same year your
yes.
mother was killed.
Yes, and I had just, that's another thing I just found out from you as well. We were kept in the dark for so long.
And that's a shame because I often think about how your father must have felt not having any communication other than feeling like he was in the spotlight as far
right.
as a suspect. I wish that we could go back and change that, but we can't. So she's taken from Jay's Night Owl immediately. Well, I say immediately, within a couple of days, I believe, this man comes forward that he's got a premonition. He's in the general vicinity. He kind of leads them in a direction. He tells them that there were multiple people involved and they were in a white pickup with Oklahoma tags, but he never specifically pinpoints the exact location. Now, he's always a little vague, but some of the details were just unbelievable. And like I said, you have to believe that he had firsthand knowledge.
Right.
So she's taken on the 19th. She's found 9 days later. Of course, it's the summertime, and they have a tough time with gathering a lot of evidence. And then a few years later, another man comes forward and says that he was a participant. And he names the same person that they were going to go forward with a murder indictment for in 79. And they still don't do anything with him.
I just don't understand why they are refusing to question this man. We were actually made promises that they were going to pick him up on a PTR to question him, and they have still yet to do that.
Yes, I know. And I spoke with the prosecuting attorney's office last week, and they have not. And there are not immediate plans to do that.
And I do know that our emails and our letters have gone unanswered, our calls, and I would like to know what the reason is for that.
I myself cannot answer that. See, I feel like you. I feel like you're part of my family because I've talked to you so much.
Yeah, I feel the same.
And I think about Lois every single day. If I don't talk about her, I think about her. And generally, not a day goes by that we don't talk about Lois Enzi because we've worked this case really hard. So there's this one particular person who we did a teaser in one of our promos that we were going to cover some homicides by a suspected serial killer that lived right here in the Fort Smith, Arkansas area. Now, we believe he was responsible. This is our opinion, along with a lot of people in law enforcement, that this person was responsible for your mother's death. And he may have had accomplices.
Yes, I believe that as well.
He lived in Fort Smith just in the same town that Lois was murdered in all these years, and obviously he did get away with it. But right. We still have one person alive that implicated himself as having been there when the crime took place.
Yes, we do.
And he's still walking the streets of Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Yes, and that's a scary thought for all those other people out there. You know, who knows what he's done since or what he'll do again.
That's correct. What I'm hoping is that from this crime cast, we're hoping to get some attention on the murder of Lois Maxine Enzi from 1979, July the 19th, 1979. There's got to be someone out there. Now, we were told early on, and we read it in the case file, that there were some young boys that lived near the area of Jay's Night Owl.
Yes, and my aunt actually questioned them at the time of the murder.
So what we would like to do is locate those boys and see if they still have the information that they came forward with back in 1979, because they came forward with some very relevant information.
Yes, they did. Very important information.
Now, there was another problem with your mother's case. And, of course, this was back in 1979, so we can't blame, and I don't ever want anybody to think that I'm blaming the police department that's there now for what happened in 1979. But in 1979, we understand that there was a detective in the Fort Smith Police Department that may have destroyed some evidence.
Yes, I have heard the same thing.
One of the things that supposedly was destroyed was this information.
Yes.
Now, your aunt spoke to them. She had an idea of about the area that they lived in. She spoke with their, according to your aunt, she spoke to their parents and to the children. And so we really think that our next step is to find these four, there'll be young men now, is to find them. See if they can come forward. They can come forward. We will never release their names if they don't want. The police would not release their names. I mean, it would be anonymously, it would be confidentially. But they could have some very important information, and they may still be out here in the Fort Smith area.
Yeah, they very well could be. Could have families of their own now. So it's very important that we find these children. Well, yes. I guess they're not children anymore. They're, like you said, they're older. They'd be older than I am.
Yeah, they would be around 50 years old. 50, because they were 8 to 10, maybe 12 years old at the time. So I think that's what I really hope to achieve from this crime cast. One is to make the area familiar with the name Lois Enzi. And I'm a lot older than you, and I remember being a young mother when this happened, and it just broke my heart. And I've never forgotten it, but I'm one of these people, as you have learned, that I remember a lot about crimes, murders, homicides, missing persons. I may not remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, but I'll remember about a homicide. That one has always stuck with me because she was so young, she was beautiful, she was smart, she had so much going for her. And it was sad.
It was sad. I mean, who knows where our family would be today if she were living. Yes. You know, just the knowledge and the wisdom she could have passed on to all of us.
Absolutely. This was a young mother. She was trying to earn a living. She had just started a new job. She was taken by this person or persons and brutally murdered and left in a field on Treese Road to be found. And eventually she was found by a couple and their daughter. They were traveling to Fort Smith, and they stopped there for just a little break, and the daughter happened to notice your mother's body. So thankfully they found her. Now,
yes. I don't know if she ever would have been found if it wouldn't have been for them.
It's a really isolated area, even though it's right off of a busy highway.
Right.
And it's not very far from Jay's Night Owl, really. And
no.
It would be the back way to Hackett, Arkansas. Let's go back just a little bit. So we have Lois, who just has returned from Germany. She's got two children. She's kidnapped from Jay's Night Owl. She's brutally murdered. And 42 years later, there's still no answers, really. Now, there's a few answers. I mean, you've gotten a lot more information than you have. We shared the case file with you. It had a lot of information in it. But it seems like they tried really hard at first. And then there was a long period that they didn't. And then something would happen and someone would come forward and they would get a little information. But here it is, 42 years later, and we believe with all of our heart that there's still one person walking around that may have participated in it, and we believe there could be four young men out there somewhere with some very important information.
Right. There is.
If you could speak to any of these people, either to the person of interest or to the four young men that may have some information, what would you want to say to them?
Well, to those four young men, I would really just beg of them to please come forward and tell us what you had told the police back then in 1979. What you know is probably very important to maybe even getting an arrest and some closure for my family after 42 years. To the person of interest, my question is just why? Why? We do know that he was known to my mother. My mother knew him, and as also with the other fellow as well. This to me was not random, and I just want to know why he took her from us.
Well, let's close it on that. Let's hope that they do. Contact us, Revamp, at Remember Every Victim and Missing Person. You can catch us on our website at www.remembereveryvictim.com. You can email us at info@remembereveryvictim.com. But you can always reach out to the Fort Smith Police Department and give their tip. So let's hope that someone can come forward and maybe give your family some resolution to this case.
That's all we've ever wanted.
That's right. And thank you so much, Nikki.
Thank you, Patty.
Hopefully, we'll see you soon.
I hope so. And thank you so much for all of your hard work.
So that was Nikki Enzi. And now I have Christy Petty, who is one of our Arkansas team members. Let's talk a little bit about this case. Sheriff Cawthorn, who was at Sebastian County, he ended up doing a lot of legwork, and he really didn't leave anything unturned, but he just didn't have a lot to go on. Now, I said earlier that it was Fort Smith PD. Fort Smith was originally involved because it was a kidnapping, and it took several days before her body was found. Once it was found inside Sebastian County, so Sebastian County took over the investigation once her body had been found. And they really did try. They went through cash register receipts for every entry into the cash register, and they identified them down to a couple of young girls that bought some bubble gum. But they just didn't get anywhere. They did have a witness come forward that said he saw a couple of motorcycles parked behind the store about that time. And there were numerous people that they talked to that thought they saw someone there, or maybe they were mistaken, it was another customer, but they did follow through on all of those. I just don't see that at that time they had anything they could really go on other than the premonition. Now, there was other things that were interesting, and Christy, you want to tell them about the jean jacket?
Yes, I would love to go into that. So, apparently she was wearing a jean jacket that day. And it was found over by Greenwood. A woman saw it in the middle of their neighborhood street, and she was in a hurry to get home to watch a pageant of some sort. I don't know if it was Miss America, Miss USA, something like that. And so she was just, you know, in too much of a hurry to stop and pick it up. Well, a couple of days later, her husband picks it up. She washed it, and her son wore it. She had no idea that it was, you know, part of this missing woman case. And so then she sees on the news and realized it might be the jacket belonging to this missing woman. And so she calls the police. Now, this is just crazy to me because of where it was found. Because Lois, her body was found over on a different street, you know, way across town. And this is over by Greenwood. So why is it, you know, why did they go to such lengths to make it all the way in the other direction? I don't know if it was to throw the police off or what, but they really, really put in an effort to conceal that jacket for some reason. And sadly, you know, the woman washed it. So there wasn't any, you know, if there was any evidence on it, there wasn't any now. So it was, I think she, the timeline that they said she was kidnapped at was like 6, maybe, and that woman knew that that pageant started at 7 o'clock, and she was running a little late to get there, so We know that jacket was seen just before 7 o'clock that night. So it's really crazy that they took the time to drive all the way to Greenwood, throw that jacket out in the street, and then I have to question, did they do that before or after they murdered Lois and, you know, dumped her body off on the street she was found?
It's almost like it was a red herring. Maybe they threw it out, like you said, to throw the police off. Because her body was found in the opposite direction if you take 71 South. The jacket was found to the left of 71, and Lois's body was found closer to Fort Smith and to the right of 71. And like we said before, it was the road that would take you the back way over towards Hackett and Bonanza. And it was dumped out so close to the time that she was taken that it makes you think they drove over there, threw the jacket out like they were going in that direction just to throw the police off, and then backtracked and went across 71 over to Treese Road. Now, there's another interesting part of this. This whole case is interesting. But let's go back to the man who was in jail in Sebastian County in the early 80s that signed a statement, a confession, that he was a participant in this. Now, he claims that he was not part of the kidnapping because she walked out willingly, and he claims that he got out of the truck while they killed her. However, while he's in jail, he says that he was a homosexual lover of Alvin's. Now, he knew Alvin by a different name. It was a nickname. But because they served time together, he realized that his real name was Alvin. Now, even though he claims that they had a homosexual relationship, he did not want his wife to find out because he was married at the time. But this guy was also related to Lois's husband in a roundabout way by marriage. This man's mother had been Mr. Enzi's stepmother, and so he knew the Enzi's. Also during that period of time, his family comes forward that he's seen driving a white truck with Oklahoma tags. And I find all of that just unbelievably coincidental. There's also another thing in the premonition that stands out. So let's talk about the premonition, shall we, Christy? Do you remember what was said about how many times she was shot? Now, keep in mind, this premonition, he comes forward with this before Lois's body is found.
Oh, yes. This premonition is just crazy. Not only did he list some of the facts about what happened to Lois, but he had this premonition before her body was ever found. So to me, unless he was actually there and a part of what happened to her, there's no way to know this information. There's just not. So in his premonition, he said that there were three men that kidnapped her. He said that she was out in a field with something white in the field. Not sure what that was. That there was a pickup truck with Oklahoma tags out of Oklahoma City. He even gave a partial tag number, but it did not match anything in their database. So it could have been an old tag from years ago that was no longer in the system that they just, you know, threw on the truck so that way it wouldn't get traced back to anybody. He even said how many times she had been shot, which was three, and that was correct. So there's just too much there that puts him in a situation to where he could have easily been there, and there wasn't anything else done about it. He wasn't, you know, questioned any further, and why, we'll never know, I guess now, but it's just crazy that somebody can have a so-called premonition and actually have some facts. And, you know, they walked free.
It is truly sad all the way around. So, what we've hoped to achieve from this podcast is we hope that those young men will come forward. And if anybody else knows anything about this crime of Lois Enzi from 1979, please call the Sebastian County Sheriff's Office or contact us on Facebook. We're at REVAMP, which stands for Remember Every Victim and Missing Person, or you can catch us on our website at www.rememberEveryVictim.com. And Lois Enzi, we will not forget.